This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech.
What the Tech?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, the returning Paul Theroad. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
You're back.
I am back.
How was Build?
It was busy.
Did you have fun?
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
I know normally a lot of these trips are hectic and you're running around like a lunatic and it's difficult to enjoy it, but did you enjoy this trip?
I apologize, I'm bleeding here.
It's okay, keep bleeding.
I wish I could stop.
It's all right.
What do you call it when you have a trouble like you can't not bleed? What is that called?
Hemophilia?
Yeah, I have that. So, actually, it was a good trip. It was really busy. You know, a lot of the business trips I go on, I'm like exhausted all the time and the schedule stinks and, you know, it's kind of stressy or whatever. But, I mean, there's a little bit of stress on Friday because we did that Windows Weekly episode from the show. It's literally, my blood is dripping off of the corner of my nose.
It's okay. It's a bonus for people watching.
Yep. Sorry about that.
If you're watching the video feed, you're going to see Paul bleed to death here on the show.
I can feel it like welling up on my face.
At least you got a nice little buzz by the end of the show with all the blood you lost.
A little lightheaded. Yeah. I'm just going to stand up suddenly and fall over. Honestly, it was a great trip. You know, these things, you know how it is.
I know.
You know, when we have things in New York, a bunch of us head over to Rattle and Hum, and it's kind of like that. You know, it's like a family reunion.
But
I know a lot of the people.
At least that's one day, you know? Like, you were there all week covering one of the biggest, you know, weeks for Microsoft or developers, you know? It's more of, like, I go to NAB. Right. Like I've done NAB and I've spoken at events, like I've done conferences and stuff. That still fails to compare to you actually having to work and go out and wake up in the morning and attend and pay attention. I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it is.
I'll just tell you one story. It was funny because getting to San Francisco is terrible. It takes a really long time. There's all kinds of travel issues because of fog and so forth.
Did you fly straight there or did you go to LA?
I did, yeah. Okay. Yeah, thank God. You know, the flight was long, but it was straight and it was fine. So the funny thing, though, is for Build, which is at the Moscone Center, everything we did this year was like within walking distance of a block or two of the place, including my hotel, which is two buildings away from the conference center. It was wonderful. And, by Friday, I was a little I can't remember which night. It must've been Thursday night. So Thursday night, I went back to the room. I took a nap. I was asleep for about an hour and a half. It was one of those weird things because it's time change stuff. And it was after dinner time. Raphael was off doing a HoloLens thing. Brad was off doing whatever he was doing. Mary Jo was doing something. And,
I had to
kind of will my,
You were alone.
Yeah, but I had to sort of will myself to get out of bed because I knew I'd be meeting these people later, and if I didn't get out of bed, I would wake up at 2. You know, I'd sleep until 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I would hate myself. So I'm completely, groggy and delirious, and I can hear downstairs. I had the window open in the room, and we're on the second floor above the entrance to the hotel, and downstairs I can hear like this commotion, like a party kind of a thing going on. Like, that's kind of interesting. So I went downstairs. I went through the lobby. And through the doors where you usually go and get coffee.
Can I guess what happened? Can I guess?
Sure. Paul,
it's Mary Jo and Brad doing Jello shots.
Close.
Okay.
Actually, Mary Jo, so it is a party. It's a Build, like a Microsoft mixer thing or whatever. It's in the coffee room for my hotel. It's like the most nondescript, terrible little room. But I can't see this yet because the doors are closed. So I'm thinking, that's really weird that people are even in there. But and again, I'm delirious. This is almost like a dream to me, right? So I walk by the window, I turn right outside and I look in the window. And what I see is everybody who I know is in this room. Like, I know every single person in the room, basically.
Are you still wondering if it's a dream at this point?
Yep.
Did you look down to see if you were wearing pants?
Yep. I see, you know, a couple of people from Microsoft. I saw Miguel de Casa from Xamarin, also now Microsoft. A bunch of press people. Mary Jo had just left. I found out later. Simon is waving to me through the glass, and I'm looking at him. I have no understanding of what – I just can't even imagine what's going on. And so I just turn. I'm like, I'm just going to go to where I was going, which I was just going to grab something to eat. And then he comes running out. He's like, oh, come on in, come on in. You know, so the next thing I know, I'm standing there. I'm holding a glass of wine. People are laughing and telling stories, and they're going back and forth. And I must have looked like an idiot. I'm like standing there, like I have no idea what's going on. Like it's crazy.
You were lost,
completely lost. Yeah. And so this thing wound down almost, you know, 10 minutes into this of my experience there. And I walk outside. I run into Mark Rozinovich, right, technical phone, Microsoft. Great guy. Chatted with him for a while, and then a woman walks by in a Wonder Woman costume, and I thought, you know. San Francisco is unbelievable. You know, it's just the weirdest place.
I like San Francisco. I actually enjoy going there when I don't have to work. You know, like they have good food and they got good bars and you can really enjoy it. And you're walking.
Well,
I'm telling you, I don't know. Did you walk around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love San Francisco. I mean, first of all, I love it and hate it. You know, the homeless thing I find to be tragic. The cost of everything is astronomical. But the great bars nearby. McKellar Bar, we went to a number of times. Fantastic. Even you go to the Metro, it's a stupid little mall thing. There's a good sushi restaurant in there. That, you know, it's really nice. And I just being in a self-contained little world where, in a kind of a two-block radius, it was like hotel, conference, awesome restaurants, bars, done. You know, it was just, it was very enjoyable. You know, it was really nice, and I had a good time.
There are a lot of things that you associate to San Francisco. For me, I associate everybody having the most jacked up legs in San Francisco. Everybody's legs are from walking up the hills. I have no idea how anybody does it. Everybody's legs have to be. I mean, you're talking like bodybuilder level legs on everybody. Sure. It's insane. I was exhausted just by walking one day.
Yeah, this particular trip, I didn't do any of that type of walking. I walked around the area, but that area is actually pretty flat. And so I didn't go up any of the hills or any of that stuff. So I'm just bleeding away. I don't mind me.
We're going to talk about it. Don't worry. You continue to
running
bleed.
Out of tissue.
You continue to bleed all over the place, Paul.
It's crazy how this is just going.
Paul was in a tragic accident prior to the show.
Yep.
It was with his razor.
Into a razor.
We're gonna talk about Build. I actually have so many questions because I didn't get to talk to you all week last week. So I didn't really.
Yeah,
normally I pick Paul's brain before I go on the air. And if I have like a question, I'm doing another show. Or like I'm doing like a guest spot on some radio show, I'll always message. I'm like, Paul, you got a minute? I got a couple questions for you. I didn't get to do that, so this is going to be fun. We'll talk.
Yeah. Yep.
But before we do that, I want to thank our sponsor, and I want to welcome our sponsor back to What the Tech, and that's Braintree. Now, if you are an app developer, if you have a business, if you accept mobile payments, take a minute and listen to what I have to say about this. Braintree is unbelievable. They make it super easy for you to implement all different types of payment methods into one service. You don't have to you don't have to grab code from this service and that one and try to, you know, put it together. It's literally 10 lines of code. They make it super, super simple. It's super secure. It's going based on a token system. So the information never gets, you know, the information is not floating around somewhere. Very secure in that sense. But if you're a developer and here's an example, right? You could accept any kind of currency. You could accept PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, every type of payment method. But let's say there is a new service out. I was recently talking to one of my friends. He's a developer, and it's a new payment solution that they're going to be implementing. Amazon is coming out with a new payment solution to kind of compete with PayPal. Very easy for Braintree to implement this in their code. You don't have to do a lot of work. 1, 2, 3, you're done. BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech is a site. Go there, try it out. I'm telling you, if your business accepts mobile payments, you really should look into this. Very important. We have a couple of our viewers. They've implemented Braintree in their mobile payment service. We have one of my friends. He is a clothing designer here in New York. He's implemented Braintree in his mobile payment solution the way that they accept it. It's unbelievable. Great, guys. BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. It's simple. It's secure. And I absolutely love it, actually. It's a PayPal company, so that helps also. BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. I want to thank Braintree for supporting What the Tech and, of course, for supporting the GFQ Network. Simple and easy, Paul. They're simple and easy. So let's talk about Build for a second.
Okay.
Well, we're going to talk about Build for more than a second. There were a couple things that we learned here. What did we learn? What is the one thing that we took away that you learned?
The one thing.
One of the main things.
For me, this was a validation of a thought I've had about Microsoft for some time, that they are moving very firmly into this kind of cloud business, that this is the future of the company. And, obviously, Windows 10 played a role in Build. There's no doubt about it. We'll talk about that in a moment. But really, I mean, the majority of the stuff, which is, in many ways developer focused, because that's the point of Build, was about the cloud. And not so much about the client, And I think that's an important thing because, you can kind of look at what Microsoft pushes developers towards as an indication of where the company's going, right? And it's year to year. I mean, some years is going to be a big focus on the client. Windows 10 comes out, so obviously last year was a big year for Windows 10 at Build. But, this year there's no big bang release coming on the client. And this kind of shows you, I think, a more measured look at what Microsoft is really all about, which is this cloud stuff, Azure, Office 365, and so forth.
I mean, this really isn't a major change from what their initiatives have been, but it's interesting that was the main highlight here. It was one of the main highlights. Yeah, I mean,
it wouldn't have been too hard for Microsoft to have talked a little bit about, Windows on phones, which they didn't talk about at all, which everyone noticed. I'm just trying to think of some other examples of things that, they have APIs for all kinds of things, including things like Groove, by the way, although that's arguably a cloud service too. There really was not much on the client. I mean, there was some stuff about Office add-ins, but those are interesting because they work across platforms. But I think the big stuff was just literally pure cloud. Okay, an interesting focus.
Was that a surprise for you and everybody else going into this, or was this something that you guys were aware of?
It's funny. I found out about what they were going to be talking about right before the show, so it's kind of hard to think back. Now, I mean, what would I have expected? Obviously you expect stuff about Windows 10, and they had some of that stuff. I really think that the big vision for the universal Windows platform is that you can write these apps that run across hardware devices, HoloLens, phone, Surface Hub, Xbox, and so forth. And there was a little bit of that stuff, and which makes sense. It's a developer show, but there's a lot more cloud than I would have thought. I mean, if you look at 2 days of keynotes, 2 long days of keynotes, I think I sat in that keynote hall for somewhere around 6.5 hours between the 2 days, which, by the way, is like one long, one cross-country flight. And I will now measure flights and Build keynote lengths. Like I fly to Europe, that was like 2 Build keynotes. You would almost expect like an even divide between the platforms that way, but it wasn't that way. There was a lot of cloud in day one, and day two was almost all cloud. So,
Almost nothing about Windows Phone.
Literally nothing. Yeah.
Literally nothing. I think that was one blurb at one point, but that was a little surprising. It really was. Yeah.
No, it was because it wouldn't have been hard to have shown a Windows client, a Windows Phone client from time to time. It wouldn't have been hard to have thrown out the phrase Windows Phone from time to time.
Yeah. The main thing that most people picked up on was Windows 10 anniversary update. This will be the next major, I guess, release that will be pushed around the same time that Windows 10 was pushed out. So that would be July, end of July, right?
Yeah, July-ish. I mean, they're not going to commit to a specific date.
What changes are we expecting with this? It seems like it just fixes and minor changes, but some of the stuff is big.
There's some pretty major stuff going on there. So I wasn't sure that, this is what we used to call Redstone, right? And there's a second Redstone milestone coming in 2017. I'm not sure that we expected Redstone to be that big of an update. But now looking at it after Build, and not just in what they said in the keynote, but they mentioned some other features in different sessions and so forth. And I've been kind of going on over those since I've been home, since you can watch them on Channel 9. there's a bunch of stuff, right? So there's interactive notifications. There's a bunch of stuff to integrate. Three features of the OS right now are kind of separate and really don't have a lot to do with each other, which are the start menu tiles, the items that you see in notification items that you see in Action Center, and then the actual pop-up notifications.
Yeah.
Will all kind of look and work the same way, which makes plenty of sense. Nice. You know, major Action Center update, that's going to be much, much better than before. And intriguingly, they're going to support that kind of, I don't know, handoff is maybe not the right word, but, you know, the Apple feature where you could get a text message on your phone and it appears on your Mac, you know. Okay. They're going to be doing that kind of stuff. Phone calls, voice messages, and text messages will push from your phone to your desktop computer, and you can respond to them, and they're interactive, and then they'll go, you know, out through your phone. But that will actually work with Windows 10 Mobile and Android.
Okay, so here is my question. Number one, I guess this is Windows Longhorn, because that was a major feature in Longhorn.
Okay. Yeah, sure, sure.
Okay, so what platform are they going to be using on the Windows side to receive your text messages and make phone calls? Skype?
Yeah.
See, this is where it confuses me, because you don't accept it with Skype on your phone.
Right.
Right. You have messages.
Actually, so on Windows 10 Mobile, there are actually three apps that are Skype enabled, and two of them are the phone app and the messages app. So you actually could use Skype through those apps.
You could, but you're not using it right now, right? Like, it's not like it's...
Well, I mean, it's Windows 10 Mobile, so no one's using it. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah. I mean, no one really sees it. There's also a third app that's called Skype Video, and that's obviously for video calls. On Windows 10 Mobile today, you could download the Skype app, like the, you know, similar to the app you have on a Windows PC or a Mac, where it's kind of everything in one place.
Yeah.
But the truth is, Windows 10 Mobile ships with these apps, as does, by the way, Windows 10 on
as
the PC.
Windows 10, yeah.
And so that they're integrating through the cloud. It's you know, this Cortana integration occurring. Skype is part of it. The new notification system and Action Center for Windows 10 Anniversary is in, you know, is part of it.
I mean, do you think it should be Skype, or do you think they could use Skype and just call it something else on the you know, the desktop side, where it's, you know, messages?
Well, okay, I don't really think it matters what it's called. I mean, I think the way it's going to work is you are working on your computer, and a phone call comes in. You get a little notification appears in the bottom. It says, you know, Andrew is calling or whatever, and it's an interactive notification, and so you can click
decline,
on an answer button.
Yeah.
Decline, exactly. Okay. If you accept the call, I have to speculate because I'm not exactly sure how it will work, but I assume that it will work with whatever Skype client you might have. I mean, so if you go with the universal Windows platform version of Skype all in one, I would imagine
it'll answer it on that. That's where I'm curious on how they're going to do it. Is Skype going to be single-handedly responsible for it? Because
Skype is the thing that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, I would think so.
Okay. So, I mean, that's an awesome feature. That's something people have been wanting for a long time. I'm going to tell you, on my Mac, whenever I call someone, let's say I have to make a phone call to Jess, I never call her anymore. I just do a FaceTime, because I know on the other side, I could do like a FaceTime audio call through iMessage.
Right.
So I send it to her that way. I don't really sit there and dial a phone number. I think Windows would need something like that. Android still doesn't really do that.
Yeah.
You could do a Hangout call, but you can't really send text messages within Hangouts unless you're doing Google Voice, which I don't know what they're doing with that at this point. It's the platform they haven't developed. But this is intriguing, right? Again, this kind of plays in with the whole continuum thing in a weird way, right? Like, it's almost like a weird time where, like, it's one device. It's one thing that you have. And so you're saying this is going to work with Android as well.
Yeah, and that was actually kind of an eye-opening reveal, right?
Yeah.
We know that Android is more malleable from Microsoft's perspective than, say, iOS is. You know, this is something they would love to do on iOS, and they're never going to be able to do it. So that was a very interesting point for me as well, because one of the big, you know, questions I get is, you know, Windows Phone has failed, so, you know, what do I do? And, you know, I have my own personal preference, which is for the iPhone, but obviously Android is improving in leaps and bounds. And each version that comes, I'm testing Android 6, I guess. Yeah, 6N. Or is that 7? Well, Android N, whatever version that is. On my Nexus 6P. And the one thing, actually, there are many things I really like about it. They have a new, actually, a new notification system. It's very good. But they have display scaling now of the UI. You can discreetly scale text and graphics, which is really kind of cool. And I think that stuff is kind of a big deal. And so you're seeing these improvements. And so now with Microsoft officially supporting Android integration with the Windows desktop, that kind of gives you an interesting answer to that question, because if you really liked Windows Phone because of the Microsoft integration stuff, yeah, I think suddenly Android becomes the right choice.
Yeah. I don't know if that's good or bad, right? I guess that is good, because people aren't going to run out and buy Windows Phones. I mean, is this them kind of realizing that they're never going to get to a 10% market share with this platform, with Windows Phone?
Well, that happened last July. So, yeah, I mean, they've known this for some time. I mean, I think the stuff we're seeing now, of course, has been in the works for some time, too. They very deliberately set out on a strategy to sell fewer phones because they knew that they lost money in every phone, and they're trying to make this into a business that makes sense. And I think the way it makes sense is they just don't sell phones. And so I think we'll get there eventually. But obviously Windows is going to continue on the phone form factor. I mean, there's the cost of that has already occurred. And so you have this platform where apps can scale very elegantly down from very small form factors to larger form factors. And it's not hard for them to keep doing that. So, you know, it kind of continues. But the truth is, you know, the future of the phone is, you know, Windows doesn't really factor into it, but Microsoft can factor into it, and they can factor into it by having apps on those phones and by having services that integrate with those phones. And I think that's, you know, what they're trying to do right now.
I'm just waiting for that launcher, you know, like a Windows phone launcher.
Yeah.
That kind of takes the Android shell and, you know, becomes Windows Phone, and now
I mean, it's a chicken and the egg issue, because obviously you would need some way for the apps that are going to be exposed as tiles to use that information and to display that information. And, you know, what Android app developer is going to do that?
I wonder, like, I wonder if they could create some sort of bundle, right? Like where it's the launcher plus
all
the Microsoft apps. Yeah. So you pretty much, it could work as if it's Windows Phone.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so that's an option, you know, if that's a possibility. Because I would love that on my phone. The problem is, as a Verizon user, number one, there's no Windows phones, really. It's the Icon. That's the last one that you could personally probably buy right now. And I like the UI. I like the Microsoft applications. I wouldn't be against installing that on my phone. I don't know if that's taking away from the Microsoft experience, you know, the Windows 10 mobile experience. I think the thing that's going to eventually be a major selling point is Continuum once it becomes more and more advanced.
Yeah, I just looked at Continuum again because of Build. In fact, that's something I spent time on over the weekend since I've been home. And, you know, Continuum is very interesting. I suspect a lot of people aren't actually super familiar with what it even really is on a phone, but it works in a myriad of ways. It's really kind of a neat thing, but you can use a wireless adapter, you know, a Miracast adapter. So you can, in the past with Windows Phone, you could project your phone screen up onto an HDTV. And that's fine. You know, you turn it sideways, it kind of fills the display. You can watch a movie, you know, play with one of the music apps or whatever. And that's cool. And that still works in Windows 10 Mobile if you want to do that. But by default, that wireless connection is done through Continuum. And with Continuum, what you have is two screens. You have the phone screen, which retains its portrait view, you know, touch interface. And then up on that HDTV, what you have is a Windows desktop. It's not completely identical to the Windows 10 desktop, but it's very, very close.
I think the start menu is a little different, right? Was that it? That's like one of the
things.
Well,
the start menu is your start screen.
Yeah.
So on the phone. So in other words, in a menu on the big screen, what you see are your phone apps arrayed as you have them on the phone. And because not all apps support the big screen, right, using that Universal Windows Platform functionality, those apps are on the big screen are dimmed out, indicating you can't launch them on the screen. So if you select them on the start menu on the screen, they launch there. If you select them on the phone, they launch there. You can make phone calls and send text messages while you're doing both things. The screen of your phone by default turns into a mouse pad. So you kind of move your finger around on the surface of the screen and the mouse cursor moves up on the big screen, which is cool. You can get rid of that if you don't want it. you could connect a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and just have a completely wireless experience. It's pretty great.
How good does it perform for you?
It's fantastic. I do not experience lag with this. If you have a dock, you can wire everything together. You can add USB peripherals like storage devices, hard drives and memory sticks and so forth. And of course, you can power the device as well. And where this falls apart is it doesn't run desktop apps, right? So you're stuck with the universal Windows platform apps or the Windows Phone apps, which can only run on the phone. And there's some good ones. Like the MSN apps are all there, news and sports and all that. The Office apps are all there, obviously. The built-in apps mostly work on Continuum, so that makes sense. Mail, calendar, people, and so forth. Really good. But you can't run desktop apps. And I think this is the final little stick. Just on a side note, one of the things I looked at when I was at Build was a laptop clamshell that has no CPU, no RAM of its own, but it's got the keyboard and trackpad and screen.
Okay.
It's got USB ports. It's got HDMI port, micro SD, and Bluetooth. You can do all kinds of things. Yeah. But for Windows Phone, you can use it for Continuum. So it's exactly what I described, but instead of having an HDTV up on the wall, using a laptop.
So how much would that be?
Battery. Right now, it's $120.
Do you know the name?
Yeah, it's in an Indigo thing.
Okay.
So it's called NexDock, N-E-X Dock.
N-E-X Dock.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, tell me how close they are to being funded, because they're very, very close.
Let me see here.
When you find it.
I'm going to pull it up on this computer here.
And there'll be other solutions like that. HP has got one coming out as well, by the way. And that one will be a lot more expensive.
NEX Dock.
Yeah, just like Google search it. It's an Indigo kind of thing.
It's one word, NEX Dock?
Yeah.
Indigo. The most advanced, affordable laptop. Let's see. Okay, so...
By the way, it works with stick computers. It works with Raspberry Pi.
Oh, they're about the 20 grand more.
Yeah.
10 grand so what, more. Yeah, 15, 13 grand more.
What's the percentage?
96%.
96%. Great.
Yeah. They're looking to get $300,000 at $387. NexDock transforms Windows 10 smartphones, mini PCs, tablets, and more into a laptop.
Yeah.
It's actually really pretty.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a Chinese knockoff, right? So it looks, if you look at the way, you can't really see it in the photos too well, but the way the bottom of the screen looks as it comes down toward the base, it looks just like a MacBook Air. It's, it's plastic or whatever, but it's fine. The keyboard's great. The trackpad's fine. It's all good. So it's cheap. I mean, it's not ideal for modern Windows phones because it doesn't have USB-C, although they're looking at doing that for a second gen, but it connects to so many different things, it almost kind of doesn't matter. So you can connect it with a wire that does HDMI, which is what you see there in that photo, and then it connects to the keyboard and the trackpad with Bluetooth.
Yeah, so here's the NexDock. So it looks like a...
It's a 14-inch laptop.
Yeah, $119, and just a screen and keyboard.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I would like that. I would like something. It's possible. That's the future of computing. I mean, we look at these laptops and people are spending so much money on them. You know, I have a laptop.
So, I'm sorry to drop.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Talking over you. No. I looked at this again because they talked about some other ways you could get desktop apps on this thing. Obviously, you could use remote desktop. That's not like a great solution for consumers. Microsoft has virtualization technology that allows you to virtualize just an app instead of the whole desktop environment. And the Microsoft Azure version of that service, which is called Azure Remote App, will work with Windows 10 Mobile and Continuum. And what that means is, now again, it's going to be business by nature. This is going to be a business feature, but there's no reason Microsoft couldn't offer this to consumers as a service too, right? Remotely run full desktop apps, Visual Studio, iTunes, Chrome, Photoshop, whatever. On the Continuum screen you're connected to with your phone, right? This kind of solves the problem that desktop apps can't run on the phone. It doesn't matter, assuming you have an internet connection. So it's not something you could probably use on a plane unless you had, an internet connection on the plane. But it's not as good as local, of course, but it's not bad. And I played around with just remote desktop in my house just to kind of see, what's this experience like? And I took the computer I'm using for this, access it remotely from the phone, full screen on the on another display. You know, it takes over the screen because it's a PC, not a server. And great. It works great.
Isn't the desktop app issue going to go away once, you know, Intel gets their act together and they start making mobile chips that actually work
yeah,
well? I mean, when Microsoft, that first, let's say I'm just going to, the Surface phone has an Intel chip in there. The benefit of getting that phone would be the fact that once you dock it, you can run desktop applications. That's how I see it. I mean, I see that as a major selling point, and you know, that's how you cash in on enterprise. That's how you cash in on people that want one device for everything. You know, it's a major playing. It's a major play by Microsoft to kind of entice people to go over. I don't know if it's actually going to, but you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, back in the 1990s when Microsoft first started making small form factor versions of Windows, Windows CE and then Pocket PC and all that stuff, and finally Windows Mobile, you know, for phones explicitly, they were ridiculed a bit and criticized for bringing this big UI, this big Windows down to these small screens, right? And it is kind of interesting that today we're kind of calling for that kind of thing. But I think the reality we've come to understand over the past couple of years is that we are carrying around full-featured computers in our pockets.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, the Snapdragon 820 is as fast as an i3 or i5 chip.
And it's most likely the phone that you have in your pocket, the iPhone that you have in your pocket, is most likely faster than what you have at home, that 5 or 6 or 7-year-old laptop that you have.
Yeah, so, you know, these things have 4 gigs of RAM now. They have, 128 gigs of storage. Like, this is, we're talking about a computer.
Yeah.
And so it gets interesting. I mean, it makes this more possible. It makes it more doable.
I think when people ridiculed Microsoft for pretty much shrinking Windows XP and putting it on a phone, it was a different time. You know, you had to take your pen out and you were doing this. It was a small display. It was very different than today, you know, where you're saying, okay, well, if I dock this thing, I could run my Skype, you know, desktop application, or I could run my whatever desktop application, you know, technically whatever app you're running. I don't think it should work if you're not docked to, or it's not on a big screen, but I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be a feature that people are going to use. I mean, can you see yourself in 2 years, let's say, you know, when they more things are supported and it works a little bit better, just taking your phone and not taking a laptop with you and having, you know, some dummy shell laptop?
No. Because at that point, well, okay. I guess the argument could be made, if you're going to carry a dummy shell and a phone,
why not carry a laptop? Yeah.
Why not just carry a laptop, right? Now, I guess the argument against that would be, well, for a lot of people, you don't often need the thing that you're typing on, right? And I look at my kids and I kind of look at the way they do things. I look at the way they even do homework and stuff. And it's interesting because the computer only comes out sometimes, and it's kind of, I don't want to say the last resort, but it's only when it's really necessary. And when it's really necessary typically equates to I need a keyboard because I'm typing a lot for some reason, and or I need to print. Like those seem to be the two times.
Well, how was homework done for them on a computer?
So my daughter, it was in middle school, they actually are using Chromebooks. But she does a lot of stuff also on an iPad as well. And my son, I'm actually not sure what the official, I think they do have a laptop, but he uses his own laptop. But I don't think he does a lot on a laptop. You know, they write longer papers sometimes, which he just did, for example, that was on a laptop. But I actually, you know, actually this might be a story worth telling at some point, but we're trying to convince our son to make a decision around college that makes sense. And my wife made a big Word document with a bunch of reasons why he should do one thing over the other. And I said, you know, this is cute and everything, but you need to make a presentation out of this. And she doesn't know how. So I did it. And I transferred it. I transformed it into a nice PowerPoint presentation. And my daughter came in and she was confused by this tool I was using. And she's like, you know, what is this? I'm like, it's, you know, it's PowerPoint. It's for presentations. And she says, you know, we use Google Sheets, you know. And I thought, you're just killing me slowly.
Yeah.
You know, like this is so
I've never
sad.
Used, you know what?
You know.
No, that's a lie. I have used Google Sheets only because somebody attached an Excel doc and I opened it up in Google.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's really, I feel dirty well, Sheets using
is the,
it.
I'm sorry. I said the wrong thing. Whatever the slides or whatever it's called, the presentation.
Oh, for the
whatever their
PowerPoint. Yeah. Whatever the PowerPoint. Yeah, I've never used that. No. I don't know. I actually don't know anybody that has.
Well, but you can see why schools would use it, right? It's cheap.
It's free. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, well, it's up on a server somewhere. It's automatically updated by Google. No downloads have to happen when those updates need to. You know, I get it. I mean, I get it. I hate it, but I understand it. But that stuff has just changed a lot. So anyway, I think for my kids, if you said to them, hey, you have this iPhone, because I would want an iPhone, not a Windows phone. And if you go to school and you dock it, now all your stuff is there and, you know, your documents are all in one place or whatever. I think they would see the value in that. I mean, I'm a writer, so I'm always going to have a computer. I need a computer. I want a Windows computer. So for me, no, I don't see a time 2 or 3 years down the road where I could just get away with that.
So I personally, you know, we're talking about computers and I have this new HP I want to talk about, but I actually ordered something because of you, because of Therat.com. There was a post there. It was like one of your daily rundowns.
Mm-hmm.
And you spoke about the new Acer Chromebook 14.
Okay. So it's funny. You just brought this up.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, I don't recall talking about this with you.
No.
And that's where you're. Okay.
No, we never spoke about it.
Got it.
You posted it. I ordered one. It's pre-ordered on Amazon. It's $299 right now. I don't know when it's coming out, but I pre-ordered it for a couple of reasons. One, I don't have a Chromebook, so I want to experience it. Two, I want to see how much work I could actually get done on this thing. And I am willing to bet that I probably could get a lot of work done because I use every one of these Google tools. I use Gmail for my email client. I use Chrome as my browser. I'm using Google Docs. So, and I do Hangouts to have conversations. So I'm curious on how much real everyday stuff I could get done on a $300, sub-$300 laptop that's not running Windows.
Right.
And you brought it up. You said you probably could get a lot of work done.
Yeah. I mean, I have particular needs. I mean, and my needs are unique. I'm not trying to cast my own, experiences on the rest of the world. I look to my kids. I look what other people do. I mean, I do think a lot of people, I don't know that a phone is necessarily ideal for even basic interactions, right? Triaging email or whatever. But that, maybe that's why the tablet form factor kind of starts to make sense. And maybe that's why everyone's getting into a 2-in-1, because that is another way of transforming one device into another device. And at least with a tablet, it's a bigger screen. So when you're just using it with touch and you're reading something on a web page or you're reading email or you're doing kind of basic things where it's not a lot of typing, the screen's big enough where it's not horrible to interact with. And when you do need that capability, instead of pulling out a laptop, you're pulling out a keyboard,
Is it? I think more and more people are kind of moving over and they're getting their stuff done on their phone. I witnessed something amazing. I was in the city and I was waiting at a bar because my train was going to arrive in like 40 minutes. But I missed it. And I'm sitting at a bar and this guy pulled out his phone like this.
Mm-hmm.
Had like a little station. It like the case kind of bent like this. So he had it like this. He had a little Bluetooth keyboard and he started typing up a document.
You actually witnessed someone doing this.
Keyboard is like a full size keyboard, like not a full size, but like funny. A laptop size keyboard. Brings it up and he starts typing away, blah, 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 blah. He gets up, he puts it in his bag and just leaves. I was stunned.
All right, so we're going to go off the rails here a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because the truth is I think about this stuff a lot. And the thing you just described, that's something I experimented with years and years ago, many times. I had a Palm, I want to say TX maybe was the model. And I had different Palms. Actually, I don't remember which one this was exactly. But I had a Bluetooth keyboard. It required like this little swing arm that would come over to connect. Actually, it must have been IR-based because it needed a swing arm so that you could see the thing. And the plane jostled and the device hung and I had to reset it and I lost everything I wrote. And that was the last time I did that for a while. But I think about this stuff a lot. And so, for example, at home I have this giant screen, big keyboard, mouse, and all that stuff. It's a computer. But when we do home swaps every year, right? And I was thinking this year, you know, we're actually going to go on a shorter trip than usual this year because my son's going off to college. But I was sort of thinking about it this year, and I was thinking, you know, it'd be interesting if you could do something what you're describing. In other words, you travel with a little bit of stuff, but when you get there, you have a kind of a better experience. Like if they just had a screen and I could connect a computer to it, wouldn't that be
yeah,
kind of cool?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Travel with less. So I'm not going to unfold this thing because I just got it and I literally have no idea how it unfolds. But I bought this thing, right?
What is that?
So this is it's called a Roost laptop stand. It's something, it folds out like a beach chair.
Okay.
Right? And so it's this artifice that is in front of you. And the point of this thing is you put the laptop up on top of it and now the screen
what's the
is
name
up
of it?
Here.
It's called the what?
Roost.
R-O-R-O-U?
R-O-O-S-T. Actually, if you go to theroooststand.com, you can see it.
Okay.
So why would I want this thing, right? So if I go away with a Surface Book, I would be bringing a bit more stuff, right? So I could bring my keyboard, which is, I think it's Bluetooth, but it has a dongle, and my mouse, and have my desktop stuff. I could put a Surface Book, probably, or whatever, computer, maybe a 15-inch, you know, Spectre X360, whatever. But now the screen's going to be up here in front of my face.
Yeah.
Right? And I can have my normal work experience now, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I wouldn't take it on like a little trip. Like I went to San Francisco for 4 or 5 days. I'm not going to take something like that. I'm not going to carry all that extra stuff. I want to do carry-on. But if I'm actually going to Europe, going on a long trip, why not make it a little bit better? The thing's not super expensive, I don't think. I don't remember what I paid for it.
I think it's like $79.
$79. Okay. Yeah. That actually is kind of stupid expensive. But I just, you know, I want this to be a better experience, right? Like I don't, it's okay for me with my gigantic hands to be hunched over like a little laptop keyboard for a couple of days in a row. Like I can do that for a little bit. But if I'm going to be gone for 2 or 3 weeks or a month, right? I want the real thing. Like, why not? This keyboard would travel very well inside of a bag, as with this stupid little thing that's, you know, all folded up. And so it's semi-related to what we're talking about, right? It's like, how do we make, you know, things
it
more efficient?
Like, seems like we're trying to, you know, things are becoming more efficient and quicker and faster with, you know, everybody has a phone and you could do everything on it, but we're also adding more things. You know, my traveling pack, like even to go see you, has been, you know, I bring this, I bring the phone, I bring this, I bring a charger, I bring a second charger. I mean, just because I'm going into Manhattan, you know, it's crazy.
Especially for work travel, I'm always trying to travel as minimally as possible. And I think I did a great job on this last trip. But what I'm talking about here is a longer trip. And what I want to do is I want to emulate my homework environment without bringing it with me, you know. Bringing like a really thin keyboard, like I don't know if I can, you know, like this thing. Let's see if I can make it thin.
Oh, that
for
is
you.
Thin. Yeah, no,
it's
that's
thin,
really,
right?
Yeah.
This would go in with my clothing very easily. I'm already carrying the mouse, and then this. It's nothing. And if I'm going to be gone for weeks at a time, I mean, why not? You know, I think we go through these stages with technology where it's not really clear what the best way to do something is. And so I think as you know, you have a phone, you have a tablet, you have a laptop, you're packing all the stuff, you're packing all the chargers for those things, the cables and everything that goes with them. And you're like, well, I'd like to downsize a little bit. Like what makes sense? We could combine two of the devices. That would make some sense. If you could read on a phone, you might not need a tablet, you know, or play games on it, whatever you might be doing. But then you have the issues of battery life and do I need a charger? You're carrying yet another thing, you know, I don't know. And so, I've kind of gone back and forth on this, and I really kind of subscribe to or prescribe the every tool, you know, the right tool for the job kind of thing. And for me, working, writing, the right tool for that job is a laptop or something like a Windows something, like a, you know, I got a Windows 2-in-1, which is, you know, I use as a laptop. It's a lot more efficient to me than using like an iPad. Or whatever.
Yeah.
But for other people, that might not be the case. You know,
I think it. You know, it's amazing. It's whatever you're used to, right? Like we talk about efficiency. Well, like for you, it would be difficult for you to walk around with an iPad and get your work done. But if someone has been doing it for 2 years, then they're going to be way more efficient at that than using, you know, their laptop.
So what you're used to is part of it, but I would at least give myself just a hair of credit here. Like, I do try different things all the time.
You do, yeah.
And I really do experiment with this stuff. I'm not averse to change, you know. I am willing to give this stuff a shot. I have very specific needs when it comes to, I create content, I put it on the web, there are images involved, they have to be a certain way. There's a workflow. You know, there are certain tools.
And you need to use the tools that you've been using for...
Well, or something that does the same job that works as well. Yeah. So, for example, one of the big changes on Windows for me over the years is my requirements for like heavy, locally installed Windows applications has kind of gone down and down and down because I'm using more and more web applications. And one of the big, heavy desktop apps that I still install because I can't find a suitable replacement is Photoshop Elements. And by the way, there are all kinds of applications that do what Photoshop Elements do, some of which are free, like paint.net or, you know, whatever. And people will say, well, why don't you use this or why don't you use this? And it's hard to describe because it's not just I need an application that can edit images. I have very specific needs around cropping and doing other things that I do every day. And I try these other things and they just don't work as well. And so when I set up a new computer, whether it's here on my desk or I'm taking it on the road, like I spend time installing these things. And I wish I could get rid of Photoshop. It's a weird thing to say, but I wish there was something that was as elegant as that, that worked as well, that was as efficient. And I'm absolutely willing to try. It's not just that I'm used to it, you know, like I really do want to find something smaller.
Yeah, it's interesting. I used to crop all the images for the website. I don't do a lot of that anymore, but when I do, you know what I do now? Everything is in Photos, Google Photos. I mean, it's the easiest and I do it on my phone.
Oh,
I don't do it on my I just grab my phone. I'm like, "Oh, I got to post this right now." I crop the edges, enhance it, whatever I'm going to do to it, and then I just log on to my computer because it's quicker for me to do it on my phone than to actually open up an application to do it.
So Google Photos is a great example of something that is more efficient than the way I used to do things. Let's say I get like a new laptop comes in. I'm going to take pictures of it. I take pictures with my phone. And so I go into the table that I take the pictures on. I take my pictures, you know. In the old days, I would take the phone into my office. I would plug in a cable, plug it into the phone, accept the prompts in the phone, open it up in File Explorer and drag the pictures out, or use Windows Live Photo Gallery or some program to download those exact photos into a folder. And then I pull them into Photoshop and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot, you know, it's all this work. Now I can take the photos, sit down, I can open my web browser. They've synced to Google Photos and I can just look at them and pick the ones I want and download them from there. I don't have to, my phone never has to see my computer, you know?
It's amazing, right?
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's just done, you know. The other thing was, you know, part of the – it's not just like work photos, personal photos as well. You know, part of the deal with that, you know, originally was, well, I want them on my computer because that's where I keep things. And that's not where I keep things anymore. I don't – the photos being on my computer is pointless. What I want is those things backed up, and I want them backed up to multiple places. And so, by the way, on my phones, I use OneDrive as well, right? Because I want to make sure – that they're in different services, you know.
It's amazing. I mean, how the way that we do things changes and evolves, that you know, depending on what we're using and what we're getting used to. Talking about change, I want to bring something up. I want to get your opinion on this before we run out of time. I want to talk to you about the Tesla, the Model 3. What do you think of it?
So, I'm excited by a Tesla that costs $35,000.
Yeah.
I think that's the starting price. But
starting price, yeah.
That makes it interesting. Like when I look at the price of the existing Tesla model, the sports car, whatever that's called, the four-door sports car kind of thing, I'm not actually really impressed by that vehicle, because if you threw that much money at me and said you can buy a car, the Tesla would never factor into my decision. There's no way. There's so many amazing BMWs or Mercedes that I would buy, Porsches, whatever.
Because I think starting is what, like 75G?
I think about that kind of money and I'm like, oh, I could easily come up with 10 cars. When you get down to the $35,000 range, that's the average starting price, or the average selling price, I should say, of a new car today. I'm sure it's about $35,000.
For an entry-level luxury, I guess, sedan.
No, I mean, the average price of all cars being sold new is probably $35,000.
Probably around there, yeah.
It's north of 30, I know that.
It is, yeah.
So that makes it really interesting because now it's not this aspirational thing for rich people. You still have to be pretty affluent to afford a $35,000 car, of course, but it's much more approachable. It's much more interesting. And the cars that you're competing against, now we're not talking about supercars, right? We're just talking about cars. So, you know, what kind of a Mercedes could you buy for 35 grand? You're talking about a real entry-level C-Class. What kind of, you know, BMW?
Probably one series. Yeah, one series.
So those are nice cars, and that's fine. But now this is a conversation. And the fact that this thing is electric, I mean, you would buy this for the same reason my wife bought the Volkswagen TDI she didn't realize was destroying the environment, you know, for all the right reasons, right? It's now it becomes interesting.
Yeah.
And so I'm not a super fan of the styling of their vehicles and the interior, that kind of giant iPad Pro looking screen.
Did you see what they did to the interior? It is actually horrendous on the new one. On this one.
Is it really?
The other one is not bad, right? It's like it's actually cool and looks, this one looks like it's a test, it's like a dummy car. They literally took a 15 inch display and they didn't put it like the long way. They have it in like this. So it's literally just like a screen right slapped on and everything is on there. There's nothing in front of you on a dash. It's really bizarre looking. The other thing they've already done upwards of 200,000 pre-orders for this thing. So,
oh yeah, I thought it might be in the 275 range.
It's probably in the 275 now.
Yeah.
And I believe they're only producing about 50,000 of them a year. So if you're if you're number 300,000,
you got to put down, what do you have to put down, like $1,000 or
something? Yeah, $1,000. You're looking at 6 years, you know, to get this car.
Okay, that'll be time for you to save up for the vehicle.
Yeah, you know? Now you can save up in 6 years and buy cash and
it's very interesting.
I don't know if Tesla to me was
not interesting before. Now, okay.
Because it's affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you, you know, we built a spaceship that can take people to the moon. Great. How much is the trip? $1 million. Okay, well, it doesn't help if no one can go, you know. It's amazing.
The current is 50,000 new ones. Will be up to 500,000 in the coming years. So
what will?
They're going to be making 500,000 cars a year.
Oh, this is the production.
Yeah. That's the goal, yeah. 500,000 a year, I heard. Yeah, I don't know if they're capable of that right now, if that's a realistic production-wise, you know, for them to be able to produce that many new vehicles. But, you know, I think I don't think Tesla is going to be one of these car companies that we look in 20 years and say, my God, these guys are putting out unbelievable vehicles. I think it's going to be they were the first to change the way that the car industry looks at vehicles. They look at it as if it's a piece of technology. The car companies still look at it as if it's 1912 and, you know, they're just slapping things together.
This is a rude
awakening.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the car industry was ripe for disruption in this way.
Yeah.
And when I look at Apple is clearly working on a car. I don't know if Google is working on self-driving cars and things, that kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure about that kind of thing. But I like the notion of a pure play. I mean, Tesla makes cars, you know. Tesla doesn't make mobile apps. They don't make couches. You know, they don't make refrigerators. They make cars. This is what we do. It's interesting to have someone just kind of walk in and wipe the floor with everybody, with everything rather. It's very interesting. So when Tesla was just a luxury car maker, it's like, well, okay, you know, kind of strange. Like you, I don't know if you see a lot of Teslas where you are. I would never see a Tesla in Dedham,
once a week.
There's a Tesla dealership in Dedham, actually, as I said that. So I guess I would see one now because of the dealership, but. You know, you go to the Microsoft area around their campus, there are Teslas everywhere. You go to, you know, San Francisco Bay Area, there are Teslas everywhere. Of course, there are these places where there are a lot of rich people.
I see once a week. I mean, we have a Tesla dealership around here, so I'll see one, you know, every now and then. And, you know, listen, it's a pretty car. The interior is great. The people that own them love them. I mean, their satisfaction has to be.
They should be. When you spend that much money, you gotta love that thing, you know.
Well, you'll be surprised. Ask anybody that owns a Maserati if they love their car. You know, Sure. But it's interesting to me because now you look at General Motors is putting out an electric car. There's going to be a Chevy electric car that's, you know, it's not as cool looking as this one, but it's going to be in the same price range, and it's probably going to be available to purchase if you want an electric vehicle, if that's what you want to buy.
By the way, and when I sort of mentioned, you know, ripe for disruption, I mean, the car industry is strange in that they've been doing the wrong thing over and over again for years and years. Yeah. They've been pushed screaming and kicking and screaming into every possible technological advance. Like, they've wanted nothing to do with airbags or, you know, seatbelts. Yeah. And like,
they became a financial institution for a while.
Yeah.
They became a loaning
people
company.
Loans so they could buy their cars.
Yeah.
This is why this is so beautiful. And so GM had electric car stuff years and years ago. Everyone did. And they kind of went against it because, you know, this was something that was going to require R&D expenses and blah, blah, blah. They just wanted to keep doing the same old thing and just, you know, kill the environment. And so I'd like to see this. And now that it's kind of going mainstream, or, you know, presumably is going mainstream. Yeah. It's really interesting.
I'm actually shocked that we haven't seen the car companies put, you know, they did that with the Volt, right? The Volt was Chevy's big electric.
Well, it still is, I think, isn't it? The it Volt is the new one.
Well, no, they have a Bolt now. The Bolt is the new one. Yeah.
Okay.
The Chevy Volt was their sedan. It was Bolt. Like 40 grand. Yeah. This one's a Bolt. B-O-L-T. And it looks like it's like a compact sedan. It's like a small sedan, okay. But it's going to come out 1 year earlier, and it's going to cost the same price, 35 grand. It has all the technology in it. It's more of a realistic vehicle. It's more
hatchback-y looking thing.
Yeah, it's more like a realistic vehicle for someone to drive around with other people.
It looks all right.
Yeah, listen, we still don't know. You know, it's early technology. Sure. No matter how many, you know, car manufacturers incorporate an electric vehicle in their lineup, there's still one major problem, and that's battery technology.
Yep.
It's way better than it was, but it is still years behind where we should be. We're years away from having these, you know, great battery powered vehicles.
We need the alien technology to kick in.
That's so what we need. Isn't it jump forward? Can't we just go through documents for World War II and find it?
Yep.
It's there somewhere.
It's in Roswell somewhere.
Yeah. They had it. The Germans had it.
Yeah, the Germans had it. Sure they did.
It's very interesting.
It was for their super weapon they could fire at London.
I find it all very interesting. And as someone that loves cars, like, I'm a big car guy.
Yeah,
this is exciting to me because I feel like since I do more technology coverage than I do automotive coverage, I feel like it's like going into just this archaic, you know, design. Like, everything is backwards in a vehicle. Like, no matter how many times they try to put a touchscreen navigation on your car, it's still going to suck. It's still not that great. And
touchscreen is terrible for things like you're driving along and you want to just subtly turn down the volume a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to like? It's
well, terrible. I told you, Paul, my Lexus, I can't, it doesn't, it has the navigation, it has the in-screen entertainment thing. It doesn't have a touchscreen. It's, I guess, like kind of recessed in the dash, where you have to use a joystick. So think of how awkward. And they said the reason for that is to keep your eye on the road, because if it's if it's farther in the dash, you're not looking down, you're looking straight forward and glancing. But now I have to manage with this stupid thing like this and try to guide a cursor to try to click on the thing. It's insane. There's no problem at all. It's insane. But again, that's the car industry. You know, they do these things. They incorporate these weird, weird old school ways of doing things, and then they change it. By the time they change it, it's outdated already. So, I hate the car companies. I really do.
They resist, but eventually, you know, the nice thing about Tesla is this will require them to sit up and pay attention, and they will show up like these with this Chevy Bolt.
Listen, they're losing money too, so they're not making any money. It's not about the money at this point for them.
Right.
Eventually it'll be, but they're trying. They're really trying. I find it all very interesting, Paul. I like this. I didn't go to the auto show this year. I should have gone.
Mm-hmm. I know it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
It's already moved along.
Yeah, it's over. So, look, I got an email from Paul Thurrott. AMD launches a new A-series CPU earlier than expected. I got my Therot Daily, everybody. Sign up. You get a newsletter. You get the Therot Daily. Guys, if you're watching live, we're going to do our post show now. If you want to watch it, if you listen to the podcast, you could do so by funding us. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund us there. For every time you fund it, you get access to these bonus shows and it helps us out. Helps pay the bills. All things Paul Therot, go to therot.com. You're in New York next week, huh?
Yes, I am.
Ooh, am I going to see you?
Quick trip. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Thursday night, I'll be in the city. All right, guys, that's it for this week. We'll see you all later.